All Business. All Business Bodybuilding with Joe Binley, Justin Compton, and Dominic Cardone starts now.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to All Business Bodybuilding. My name is Luke. I'm here with Joe, Justin, and Dom. Fellas, new week, new day. Joe's in the Bahamas again. I don't know what to say. I'm jealous.
I wish that's where I was at.
Yeah, I mean, the Insta story was taken specifically for you guys at your benefit, and basically everyone else on a Monday who checks my story just to actually think I'm sat there. Right. When I'm not. I'm in my apartment.
Hey, it is definitely a beautiful shot, though. So how's everybody doing? What's going on, Joe?
Not much. Well, actually, quite a bit. But it was a pretty busy week last week. A lot of progress on projects, a ton of product development. So I'm excited. I'm actually drinking some samples at the moment of another new product that I actually signed off on as well this weekend. So
cool.
We've got a bunch of stuff coming. But yeah, and then this weekend Brad was in town, so we managed to get out a little bit. It's spring break, so it was pretty chaotic down in Miami. But it was cool to see Brad and have a few drinks and go out and meet his business partners. And that presented another potential opportunity as well. It's crazy at the moment because doors just seem to be opening. And I'd be hesitant because I'm overstretched as it is. But when these opportunities come up, you've just got to kind of, I always use my favorite saying, I'll figure it out on the way. So
right.
Kind of throw myself into it. But guys, like Dom, you've been out in Miami and you have as well, Justin, but you've actually been out, Dom, because he's vacationed here a bit. How expensive is it here? I was blown away. We had a couple of drinks, like a vodka, the double vodka each in Brad's hotel, and you put it on the room. My jaw dropped when he told me how much it was. Let's go around. How much do you reckon, guys? Two double vodkas and a Coke, and Diet Coke, and I don't know what he had, a Tito's or something. Tito's with water. It might even be water. God knows.
I'm going to say it was between 40 and 50. Right?
Justin?
I don't drink much. Here's the thing, guys. I never, ever, ever drink alcohol, so I don't know what a normal price is. But I also know, I mean, just from college days, I know how much a bottle of stuff costs. I know bars rip you off, so I'm going to go on a limb and say it was at least 30.
Justin, are you from England? Because that's like, we do everything in bottles and not drinks as well. You know, how many glasses? How many bottles? No, it's how many?
We'll do nearest the pin. Luke, where's your guess? And then I'll see who's
closest. I mean, I'm from South Florida, so I'm going to have to say probably like $75.
Fuck, man. $71.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
I know but then again, he was staying in, was it the Fountain Blue, right?
No. He moved to the Mandarin.
Okay. Yeah, still. I was going to say between 40 and 50, but I didn't think of those hotels. Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, anytime I went there, I always wondered where all my money went throughout the years because I was always go there, whatever, like stay another week and a half. But yeah, it's expensive. It's like going to Manhattan. When you go to places like that in Manhattan, New York, and it's just fucking bang.
Obviously, being London, a lot of cities, but I mean, it made me feel a little better spending the extra 75 cents on the organic broccoli in Walmart earlier that
year. Saying that, just actual like the fun activities and stuff down there is probably more expensive than where you came from, right?
Yeah. It was, I mean, that was honestly, it did surprise me. I mean, I expected to be that much. So,
equivalent to like LA. Like, if you're downtown LA, that's the prices you'll pay. It's even a little bit more expensive in LA, but it's like equivalent to that. You were in Huntington's a little bit more.
I didn't really go out. I didn't go out there, I don't think. Me and Brad went. No, me and Brad went out on our birthdays for both years, but we never paid any prices like that.
Were you in LA or did you stay around Huntington?
LA one. No, no. Yeah, we're in LA. We didn't do anything in Huntington.
I don't think I ever had a drink in Huntington.
Yes.
Gotcha.
The Cardinals there.
Gotcha.
Anyway, that's my week of nonsense caught up. So if anyone's visiting Miami, you might want to save up if you intend having a couple of drinks.
Start hoeing. So, Dom, what's up with you? How are you doing?
Nothing much. Same old, same as last week. You know, can't complain. Nothing nothing new on my end.
How's it been training at the Dragon's Lair? Like, is it super crazy busy, or have you been able to, like, get in, get a good session in, and roll out?
See, here's the thing. Like, towards the end of last week, got a little busy, but it wasn't busy enough to where you have to wait for anything.
Gotcha.
Like, looking at the place, you'll be like, oh, wow, it's busy in here, but you don't have to wait for anything. That's the good thing. It's like, there's limited membership. Everybody in there is serious. Everybody in there has some sort of muscle on them, you know, but it's definitely nothing like I've ever seen before. I thought the place was going to be overly packed, but apparently the plan of keeping the memberships limited is working, because it's very easy to go in there, navigate throughout, and then get out. But, you know, we were looking for excuses just to make the workouts longer, to stay in there longer.
There you go. That's cool. Well, I'm glad you're doing good. What about you, Justin? What's going on over there?
Oh, man. Same shit another day right now. I just went this weekend, tried to do a little home shopping, and, you know, found some nice homes, but honestly, nothing that I think I'm going to place a bid on.
Right.
I'm sure next weekend it'll be a whole different set of homes. I'll probably be doing that, you know, for a while till I find what I want.
What area are you looking in, Justin?
So you may not understand, like, the demographics of this. Anywhere I can get close to the Gulf Stream, which is basically going to be like Jupiter, Stuart, Port St. Lucie, West Palm Beach, those particular areas. I mean, don't get me wrong, down south is equivalent, like, where you're at. It's just the pricing down there is fucking ridiculously high, and everything moves immediately. You know, I talked to Tony, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago, and he said, like, basically when a nice home comes on the market, rather than just listing it on realtor.com or where, you know, listing it the way they normally list it, they'll list it on, like, a Monday or a Tuesday, and they won't let anyone show it until, like, Saturday, and they'll purposely do that to, I guess, try to build a little bit of anticipation. And they'll show it all in one day with, like, an open house, and then they just take the highest bid. I mean, just because the market's that on fire, and it's almost like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand South Florida is always going to be more expensive than North Florida, because North Florida's don't even deserve the term Florida into it. North Florida kind of just sucks that much. But, you know, obviously you're going to pay more for it. But right now, I mean, Tony was just giving me an example of a home that flipped in his area. They normally go for, like, 400 to 450 or something like that, and it just went for like 575. Like, you know, that's literally almost a 50% increase.
That's crazy. Yeah,
that's big. So I'm not looking to pay that. And, you know, I talked to the realtor this weekend. Obviously, you know, he's a realtor, he's a salesman, he wants to sell me a house because he wants to make money. I understand that. I don't get offensive that he's kind of pushy, but at the same time, he actually kind of slipped. He's like, you know, I'm actually a little concerned and worried about what's going to happen in the coming months, because he's like, we are running out of property to sell people. He's like, we can't keep an inventory. And then he also went on to say that you get a different opinion on this from everybody. He's predicting within the next 3 months, they're going to raise those interest rates a lot. And when they do, that's going to crash the market bad. See, me, I'm not planning on having a mortgage. I just want to buy it straight out. So if you have a mortgage, you want to buy it now because the interest rate is at its all-time low. But as soon as that goes up, the interest rates are going to go up, and therefore people are going to stop buying. So these houses are going to come down in price. Anyways, the realtors are kind of freaking out a little bit because they know that bubble is going to burst. But honestly, it's not just Florida. My friends back home in Kentucky, same deal. House comes on the market, sells the same day.
Yep. Texas is like that too. Like, there's a lot of places. So I heard even like South Dakota is booming. Like, they're expecting the entire population of South Dakota is like less than a million. It's like 980,000. They're expecting to hit 1.5 million this year.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, because those states are staying open.
Yeah, that's where people are moving from the closed states to the open states.
Either that, or a lot of people got really bored during the shutdown and all the people were having their babies.
That too. Yeah. Number two. Well, what? Crazy, dude. But I told you, I see the same thing with rental, even with just rental properties here down here by me. So just
Just move down here. Justin, I've got a great idea for a business. We'll go and buy all the cheap vodka, and I'll get a label machine. We'll relabel it, and the price is down here. I think we can make a real big profit. If it's $70 for two doubles, I mean, we can do a bottle for what, $250? We'll be golden.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll be rich in a couple of months.
Like pure grain alcohol and sell it for $25 a shot. So. We got some really good questions, which is awesome. So I'm going to start off with one that Joe is probably going to be all over this because he's kind of been living this life already. But can any of you guys see yourselves as a pescatarian? And do you believe that it would be beneficial versus like carnivore or having more meat in your diet? What have you seen from that, Joe?
For anyone who doesn't know, well, no one's going to really know. I haven't actually eaten any meat this year. So a pescatarian does, obviously, you eat fish and eggs and dairy, but you don't eat any meat. And that was not a conscious decision, I'm going to be honest. I just lost the taste for meat at the turn of the year. I was like, oh, I don't really fancy that. I was pulled my protein down quite a lot anyway. And even now, I'm probably not even consuming 100 grams. Definitely not 100 grams of protein from direct sources. Wow. I mean, I might creep up there with vegetables and carbohydrates included. But, I mean, now I'm probably having like maybe 450 mils of egg whites a day, which is about 50-60 grams of protein from direct sources. I think that's about it. But yeah, my digestion's much better. I feel a lot better. But then again, it goes hand in hand with the other stuff that I'm doing. You know, so the carbohydrates are obviously much higher. The dietary fat's very low. So there's very easy digesting food sources. So yeah, I'm kind of living that life right now. I think it's beneficial to have periods off red meat for sure. And to have periods of switching, cycling through nutrition, because people just eat the same stuff all the time. We eat way too much protein regardless. And I think I'm going to come on to this a little bit more with another question later on that we've got regarding amino acids. But I don't think we need the amount of protein that we actually eat, especially when we're in a calorie surplus, like in an off-season scenario. So I think that we cause a lot more inflammation. The body has to work a lot harder than it really has to. And you could really increase the amount of carbohydrates and reduce the amount of protein in off-season, get away with a lot more and a lot less stress on the body. Because the transit time for these meals tend to break down, we're always putting food on top of food on top of food. Right. And that's not an ideal scenario. So I'll bow out there and let the other guys chime in because we've got a few questions to work through. So I'm not going to waffle for too long on this, but for sure it's might be something worth considering for people who are struggling to get their food in. They've kind of been stagnating for a while. Just switch everything up. Go with higher GI carbs, fast digesting carbs, reduce your fiber intake, reduce your protein slightly, switch it to egg whites, some protein powders potentially if you get on with that. I really don't use them. And white fish is amazing, high in phosphorus, really good micronutrients and partitioning. So I would think it's worth doing for 2-3 weeks just to give your body a little bit of a rest.
Cool. What do you guys think?
I could definitely agree with Joe because I know from my experience, like about 6-7 weeks out. From shows I do, I switch to all cod, either cod or flounder, or I rotate it. Way easier on my stomach. I can actually eat more of it. I feel better. But even with like the last seven weeks and change, I mean, my protein was reduced to 4 to 5 ounces per meal. And there's much more variety in it, you know, between bison, steak, whole eggs, turkey breast. So I've been switching it around. I mean, I'm obviously with the changes in my digestion along with everything else I did were huge, but Just pounding that meat in all the time, just can't, you can't do it. Your body just can't cycle through all that and fast enough. So even with like my clients, when they come off cycle towards the end, I'll give them a week or two of basically little to no protein and, you know, more fruits and veggies, complex carbohydrates, you know, just to detox them quite a bit, and their stomach goes way down. I always did that as well when I came off throughout the years, but even in the, like the peak of people's off seasons, when I noticed their food's really maxed out, you know, on everything, you know, they're staying lean, but maybe the appetite's taking a dip. You can't just keep pounding the protein in, because I mean, we've seen in the past, I mean, of course, GH insulin has a big thing in it too, but slamming that food during long periods of time is just going to sit in your stomach. And what's that going to do? It's going to stretch the stomach out and it's going to stay like that. And I feel that's why we see distended guts. I mean, I remember being told that Kai was eating a pound of protein a day, and that's when his stomach was the biggest. He was literally eating 16 ounces of steak numerous times a day on top of chicken. And you can't do that. So even with guys during prep towards the end, I'll lower their protein down. And I got this idea from Joe, is the amino pulsing, while adding small little amounts, not small, but half a dose of amino to with meals or in between meals to keep, you know, the EAAs up. And they never lost any size. Waistline strength, it's easy to control the stomach and you just feel better overall. And another thing that verifies this from my past, like usually like twice a year, I mean, I haven't done it in a few years, I would do a juice fast. My dad taught me when I was younger. So I would have no foods for about a week except for, you know, green juices and maybe some coconut water. And I remember the first day would suck because you'd be really hungry. But then the second day, your energy would be as if you drank 2,000 milligrams of caffeine, but you didn't. All I needed to do was sleep 3 to 4 hours a night. My skin would glow. And I noticed, you know, especially this past going out, my stomach issues, the more protein I put in, the worse my skin got. You know, I got the lines under my eyes. My face looked very aged. My skin didn't have like that glow. So taking that time off the protein, I think, is essential, not only for bodybuilding, you know, physique purposes, but for overall health. So can I see myself doing that? Honestly, no, because like for life, no, because I like meats. It's just, I enjoy them. Like I like going to a steakhouse. I like making steak, but in overall, could it help? Oh, 150%.
You're a Texas Day Brazil kind of guy, aren't you?
Yeah, you could say that.
Me too. Hell yeah. What about you, Justin? What do you think?
I actually have a few clients that are pescatarian. And, you know, for me personally, I think that my body does tend to process, like Joe was talking about white fish, you know, not just because I'd like to do that for fun, but my body actually does process it significantly better than it does chicken or turkey. Mm-hmm. Salmon. No, I know Joe's really big on salmon, but I just personally, I know it's great for you. My body process is fine. I just absolutely can't stand the fucking taste of salmon. I don't know why. It's the only fish I won't eat. But, you know, I think that, you know, being a pescatarian, I really do feel like you could still be a very successful bodybuilder doing so. Right. You would have to substitute in, you know, different types of fats in order to get that into your diet, you know, versus getting it from any type of pork or any type of beef. But I personally don't think that would make or break a bodybuilding career or hobby, whichever one that, you know, you're doing with it. I don't think it would bother you. I mean, me personally, I'm like a part-time pescatarian, so to say. It's like when I'm eating at the house, typically I'll eat eggs, egg whites, and fish. When I go out to eat is when I'm going to eat like fried chicken or a burger or something. But like, it's never my go-to food anymore is chicken or beef. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I'm not competing anymore and I'm not as big as I was, but I wholeheartedly do feel confident saying I could literally be as big as I once was without the chicken or the beef. I mean, at the time, I think I probably would have agreed with that at the time. I would have refused to have done it because, you know, at that time I actually enjoyed beef. Like I used to eat ground beef like it was going out of style. Nowadays I could really, unless it's in the form of a burger, I could give a shit less for beef.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, overall, I don't think that, but I agree with what Dom was saying too. The actual amount of protein that people eat is just not going to be sustainable for long periods of time. And I agree with him 100% in regards to the gut, just simply because there were certain shows that I did that my stomach was not the way that I wanted it or it should have looked. And it was digestive issues. So for me, you know, a lot of people have issues with running to the bathroom all the time. Well, I was the opposite. It's like, I noticed when I lowered my protein intake, my digestion improved 1,000 times. Like in it, you know, and honestly, the less protein I eat, like Joe, I didn't do the full banana diet that you did one time, but I did an all fruit diet for a short period of time. And I've probably never felt better in my entire life. I was dropping weight. Digestion was amazing. Energy was very steady and consistent. I did not monitor my blood sugar probably at the way that I should have. I didn't feel anything, but that's not saying that it wasn't a little bit higher than normal. I mean, obviously you're eating nothing but sugars and, you know, carbs all day long. But yeah, my digestion got significantly better whenever I would get rid of stuff like chicken and beef. My body didn't feel it as good.
Your insulin sensitivity would have actually improved, Justin.
Yes.
Very cool.
So your glucose numbers would have been less.
I've encountered this now with about three or four clients when it comes to the egg whites. So being a pescatarian is not always – it don't work for everyone because I find people with food sensitivities, like let's just talk about – not talking about carbs and fats. Let's just talk about proteins for a second. I find that egg whites is actually a problem for certain people. Now, I will argue that statement. I do have one guy, though, that he's cooked it. And he's tried drinking them, and it doesn't make a difference. Some people, though – I remember a video a long time ago. Do you guys remember Ken Jackson?
I've got pictures on my old Instagram, dude. Egg whites used to kill me. I would get rashes and blisters. I'll get them for the take the pictures back out.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I definitely couldn't drink them. I would have to have them cooked. But even cooked, I would have reactions depending on where my autoimmune was at. You know.
What about do you remember Ken Jackson?
Yeah.
Okay, so I got to hang out with Ken a little bit, I think 2013-14 range, you know, when I was, you know, making my pro debut and, you know, getting started. And I remember watching a video of Ken, because me and him both did the Chicago Pro, and I was kind of like scoping out my competition going into it, and I watched his videos. This was back when MD was good, and they used to have the In the Trenches videos. And it showed him buying like a shitload of eggs, and he says if he eats the pasteurized egg whites, it was an issue for him, but if he actually cracks them and separates them, it's not a problem. What's your thoughts on that real quick?
I was about to say that, Justin, because I have the same thing. Like if I eat out of the cart, I mean, I'm not eating egg whites now, I'm eating whole eggs, but before I noticed I would get issues with the carton egg whites. And who really brought it to my attention was my client Ross, because he has stomach issues. He could eat egg whites from actual eggs all day, but from the carton, no way. But it does.
I've had the same thing, dude. I've had that as well.
Very cool.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thing I've noticed amongst people. And even when you take, like, you can take cartoned egg whites, literally cook 16 ounces of them, and then take 16 ounces, what I obviously know this is a lot of eggs. And I guess the reason I couldn't do it is I feel like I was wasting. You know, I look at that yolk, and I'm like, man, this is good quality food that's just going right to the trash can. That's why I felt bad about doing that. But if you cook them literally the exact same way, same temperature, same pan, to me, it tastes different. It's not the same.
They're completely different. The texture is different. Like the egg whites from a cracked egg are a lot thicker in consistency. They're not as watery. I mean, correct. In university, I lived on them. I mean, I was doing anywhere between 24 and 36 egg whites a day. And I used to have all the boxes stacked up in the student house. And people used to walk in like, holy fuck, what is that? And I was like, when it came to getting rid of the egg yolks, I used to have to get creative because the landlord, you couldn't wash them down the drain because the landlord was like, this is going to block everything up, which it did once. So then it ends up, you're trying to throw them out, but then it was in summer, so it's like, it was, wow, I was really struggling to get rid of all these egg yolks every day. I was like, I don't know what to do with them.
Here's what I did with mine is I didn't use an actual egg separator. I cracked the shell and I would just toss it back and forth until you get all the egg white out. And then I would take the yolk and put it in the shell and I would put it back in the carton and I would leave the carton in the refrigerator until the trash man runs.
Yeah.
And then I would take it out that day. Because if you leave it in the fridge, it won't stink or anything, but trust me.
I was going through like 24 to 36 a day, so I couldn't stack them all back in the fridge. The trash used to come once a week.
You would have maybe like, I don't know, 10, 12 egg cartons. Get the 24.
But no, I used to do the same thing. I put them back in the carton. That's what I mean. In summer, you used to put them out and then they've been in the garbage for 2 or 3 days. And it's like, oh, wow, I've got like 10,000 flies around the bin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to smell pretty bad. Imagine I did this one time. I put a barracuda carcass in the trash. Holy fucking shit. I think every neighbor and a half a mile hated me.
That's funny. They thought there was a dead body in your trash. That's great.
Oh, man. It was pretty. Barracuda stink when they're alive. Imagine what they smell when they're dead.
Rotting anything smells absolutely horrid. So it doesn't matter. But so complete left turn, real quick. I have a personal question, just something that I thought of. Joe, especially, and for all you guys, what do you guys think about the so-called Spartan diet? And let me explain if you're not sure what that is. There have been some fitness celebrities and things like that that have kind of like been talking about this lately. And it's the whole concept of one big meal a day. What do you guys think of that?
So basically, I'm going to say that's also called, backloading or basically the same thing.
It's one meal a day. That's what it's referred to mostly.
Yeah. What do you guys think of that? I know it sounds to me like it would be beneficial from a letting your gut rest, digestion kind of standpoint. But when you're eating, 3,000 calories in one sitting in a day, I mean, what is there a benefit to that for anybody?
For me, I didn't do this for a purpose. I've done it by accident or just because I've gotten so busy that my life didn't allow for anything else. I've done it before. And quite frankly, if I'm not mistaken, I think Ben Pakulski talked about this once upon a time. And I did notice I had more mental clarity. Like I would save mine towards the end of the day because I get hungry at nighttime.
Right.
And I can't go to sleep if I'm hungry. Like I'm ultimately going to get up and eat. So I would always save mine towards the end of the day because I'd be working or doing something throughout the day. And I've done it. And, as far as from a bodybuilding, if you want to be a performance athlete, I don't think that's the right way to go. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to lose weight, I think it's a great way to go. Just simple, like, again, this is not, you're not concerned about your composition. You're not concerned about competing. I think it can be a great way to lose weight. I don't think it's great for overall metabolic purposes. But that being said, chances are, let's say your base metabolic rate is 3,000 calories. If you're eating clean food, you're going to have a real hard time eating 3,000 calories of clean food in one single sitting. Yeah. So ultimately, it's going to satisfy you. I mean, try eating 3,000 calories of rice and get back to me on that. See how
you're
left.
Yeah. Joe's done it.
It'll fill you up and it'll satisfy you. And ultimately, you are going to consume less calories. But the downside for me was I would always get hungry around 3 or 4 o'clock to the point where it was like, I didn't care about clean food. It was like that's when I get actually hungry, that's when my cravings kick in. So if I don't have a goal in mind, like, hey, there's not a show, I don't have a shoot, nothing coming up, that's when I'm just like, fuck it, it's cheat meal time.
Right.
So like, if you starve me till 6 or 7, 8 o'clock at night, chances are getting me to eat chicken and, several buckets of rice or potatoes or oats is not going to happen. I'm going to be going for burgers and fries and shit stuff. And then I'm going to blow that 3,000 calorie marker completely out of the water.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that's the only downside to it. I feel like if someone can do that very efficiently and stick to it and be diligent, I think you could lose weight off of it. I mean, it's like, to me, it's intermittent fasting. I wouldn't call it a Spartan diet. I would refer to it as, seems like someone who's just taken a protocol and relabeled it for their own marketing purposes. That's what it seems like to me. It's just like, let me not call people out for once. We know many people's design training programs that literally they just put one little tiny spin to it and all of a sudden they recreated the wheel. So there's that.
Right. But I don't know what you're talking about. Can you elaborate? Who?
Oh, we could probably come up with a whole list of people here if we wanted to.
Oh, shit.
I mean, different diets and stuff that people do. I mean, I always called it a rebound diet. I think it's been that way for a long time. And somebody asked us about it before. So called the vertical diet now, right?
No, not really.
I haven't read about it, but that's how it was presented to me. And I just kind of
vertical diet's completely different.
Okay, so it basically covers
your base level micronutrients and then from low FODMAP foods, and then you build out your calories using pretty much red meat and white rice, which is very inoffensive carbohydrate wise. So it's meant to help with digestion and give you all the micronutrients that you need, and then you just stack energy on top pretty much from rice, whole eggs, and red meat.
Well, okay, so two errors here. One, I don't need to listen to other people. I need to read the articles and read it myself. And two, this goes to show you how the average person is dumb as shit because they clearly misinterpreted that, because that's not – the person who told me about it like 2 years ago asked me what I thought, and I said, well, what is it? And then they basically just pretty much the way they explained it was – they didn't go through anything what you just said, especially when you mentioned FODMAP. Most people don't know what that is. But, that's completely different the way it was explained to me. So it's funny how people can read an article and they just twist it to what they want it to be, basically. Which, I mean, that's pretty much the vast majority of society. You know, they only want to hear what they want to hear. So there's that.
Oh, show. All right. So moving on, we're going to hit the question that Joe referenced.
Dom didn't even get a chance to answer that, dude.
Oh, go. My bad. Sorry.
And neither did I, but I out of the team first. Like, Dom didn't.
Nah, I'm along the same lines as Justin. I mean, anytime I'm quote unquote fasted for a long period of time, I feel great. You know, energy is up, consistent, mental clarity is up. Have I ever done that? No, I don't believe so. At least not intentionally, to eat one meal in one sitting. But I mean, I can imagine for most people, they're going to eat a whole bunch of shit for one meal, at least the general public is. So I can't imagine, you know, trying to slam in like 3,000, 4,000 calories, whatever it is, in one sitting from shit food, because I'm not going to feel too good after that, even if I didn't eat all day. I don't think most people will. And I think if you keep doing that over and over, it's definitely going to take away from the benefits of fasting for all that period of time, because here you are cleaning yourself out, becoming more sensitive, and then you just slam your stomach with a whole bunch of inflammatory food. And it's, I can't imagine that being too beneficial, at least from my standpoint. But, you know, like Justin said, it is like a form of intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting definitely does have its uses. But if I was to do that, it would be with foods that I would not get nutrition from, as opposed to like what a lot of people do is just eating shit.
Right. Sorry, Joe. What do you want to jump in, buddy?
No, I'm not going to go because I'll talk for too long about this one.
No worries.
But yeah, it doubles down as like time restricted feeding, and right. People, it is marketed a lot because people will eat junk, and that's what makes it appealing for a lifestyle.
Right.
You can do fasting mimicking during the day as well. And I've done this. I don't think anyone was doing fat fasts 5 years ago, but I was doing fat fasts, which was basically I would have coffee and then some fat, and that will give you satiety, not give you an insulin response. So you technically fasting from a hormonal standpoint, but getting something to kill hunger. So I mean, yeah, I could go down many rabbit holes with it, but if you're an athlete, just don't do it. And what people do for, if it's for weight loss, it starts a cascade effect of, okay, one meal a day, I'm losing weight. Now I'm going to do fasting for 2 days. Now I'm going to do fasting for 3 days. Now I'm doing extended, and you just end up killing and crushing metabolism. I've seen that play out hundreds of times because I'm part of all of these food group spaces and private groups. And it's a slippery slope because it starts with a time-restricted feeding, doing eight-hour windows, then it's one meal a day, then it's every other day, then it's we'll fast for 5 days, and you're just down-regulating metabolism, and the rebound effects are pretty dramatic. So
it's basically what you're saying is it could potentially be like a gateway to an eating disorder.
Yes,
yeah.
Potentially, and again with the binging, for people who are predisposed to like eating, poor relationships with food and eating, then they will binge in that window of time that they're going to slam in 2,000, 3,000 calories, potentially feel bad and want to purge. Yeah. So it's just something that's, it'll work for some people who are like not really attached to food and they just can, they work all day and they want that lifestyle. So I get how it can work. But if you're an athlete, it is not going to be like most people listening to this are into body composition and physical development. Right. So I wouldn't advise it to anybody,
okay,
from being honest.
Cool. All right. So referencing back to what Joe mentioned a little bit earlier was listener question. Is a correctly dosed EAA formula appropriate to use as a protein source for a meal, not intra?
I think Dom touched on it. I mean, I've mentioned it before on other podcasts. And if you're eating it with a meal that doesn't even particularly contain protein, yes. Mm. It can, as long as you're hitting your protein bases throughout the day. And I think that's dramatically overestimated. I think you can get away with about 0.8 grams per pound and have great physique development. So a 200-pound guy, 160 grams of protein, more than enough. You can augment that with essentials. You can maybe drop it lower. And like I'm on less than 100 grams a day, and I'll have aminos around training. But if I'm having like a pre-workout meal or something, if I can be bothered, which I really should be, then I will just have a shaker with some aminos and some ice in with my all-carbohydrate meal or my fruit meal, you know, because you're getting amino acids from vegetables and carbohydrates, but you're not getting all of the essentials. So you have the essentials and you're going to get the non-essential amino acids are actually going to be available to you, and you're eliciting muscle protein synthesis because you're hitting the leucine threshold in a good amino product that's got at least 2.53 grams of leucine per serving. So yeah, 100% applicable. Used it personally, used it with athletes many years ago to pull down protein content and reduce waist size. And obviously Dom listened and picked up on it and used it successfully as well. And there's studies out. This, again, the study of where people consume just a normal protein and they measured muscle protein synthesis response, and then the same protein with added essential amino acids, then the level of muscle protein synthesis was vastly increased when adding the essential amino acids. So science has even proved this.
Very, very cool. So what do you think, Dom? You got a feedback on it?
Oh, again, I touched on it a little bit earlier, and basically Joe just wrapped it up a bit more in depth. But yeah, no, I'm a believer in it for sure. I've done it with I've been doing it with myself, you know, for the past 7 weeks. I've done it with clients ever since Joe told me about it a long time ago. It does work. I mean, I've never seen anybody really lose size, especially in contest prep. I mean, it's most of my guys grow into the show to begin with, and then, you know, especially it's cool too when they have to make weight. Then you could really drop the protein down with ease and add that in, because it's not really going to spike their weight up. Their waist is just going to get smaller. But, you know, basically everything Joe said is what I've been doing. Do I do it with everybody? No. But those who need it, yes. But I do believe that it can be used, you know, in conjunction with, you know, lower amount of protein. Can you just have an all EEA diet? I don't believe so. But, you know, to use it with, you know, along that baseline, like Joe said, it can definitely be used successfully. And that's why you should also use a trusted brand. You know, there's a lot of brands.
I was just going to say, there's only one caveat to everything we've said, Dom. It only works if it's with Aminotaur from Project Aiden.
Amen.
You weren't going to do it. I was going to do it for you right there. I was waiting for you to say it, but I know you don't like to plug the products.
Well, it does only work legitimately. So, guys, you have to buy the product to try the protocol.
And you have to do what I did. And that was another excuse for me to drink it with all my meals, was the new flavor, the Ocean Breeze. So,
You got your hands on that. You get the thumbs up, right?
Oh, well, if I had 10 thumbs, I would give them all up.
Listen, I'm going to give a secret weapon out to everybody out there. Okay. I love them all, but I mixed half a scoop of Crimson Cooler and half a scoop of Ocean Breeze. Wow. Amazing. Fantastic.
That's great. Well, Luke, this is probably the smartest marketing thing you've ever done since joining the company, because now you've converted a one sale into a two sale. You've got to buy them both.
There we go.
Redemption.
Yeah, sure. It's very good, though.
That's funny, because I actually told Joe it tasted so good. It reminded me of like a tropical drink, like being on vacation.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah. The next time I go out to a pool party or go out drinking, I'm sneaking in fucking little bags of Aminotaur. Who needs cocaine or drugs when you could bring in bags of Aminotaur and just put into people's drinks?
Well, Dom, I'll be selling it. I'll be selling it at the bar downstairs when you come here to visit.
See? Oh.
What was that powder? Oh, that's Aminotaur. Oh, shit. Justin, you have any experience with this specific topic?
I don't have any personal experience with it, but I mean, I do think that it could potentially be successful. I mean, as both of these guys on here obviously just elaborated as well, I've never personally done it. So, I mean, I can't offer my personal insight. I've never had a client do it. But in theory, I mean, again, if you have good quality aminos, I don't see why it would be that big of a problem.
Cool. Good deal. So, this one... Next question, and I believe this is the one where FSH and LH hormone levels are still low with this guy after he's done a full PCT. How do pros keep their fertility? Now, I think this is more of a question for like people who may only be, well, he says pros, so he could be talking about anything, but I'm thinking more along the lines of, what if you're like on HRT forever? what are some tips and tricks that people could potentially use to be to still be fertile? Is that even a possibility?
Well, you're Mr. Fertile yourself, right?
Like, well, I don't know what the hell I did. I just know I stuck it in and kids came out. I don't know what else to tell you.
Dude, I mean, there's a soundbite for this show.
But I really don't know. Like, I mean, I was probably on at least 700 milligrams of test when both of my younger daughters...
Then you've got to ask the question, are the kids definitely yours?
Yeah. They look like me. They act like me.
I'm going to go on a limb here because, you know, again, I don't know this guy's situation and whatnot, but I'm sure everybody here knows there's a lot of counterfeit product on the market.
Right.
I am curious to see or curious to know if it was doctor prescribed and it came from a legit pharmacy, like he picked it up himself, then I'd probably be scratching my head a little bit. But, you know, I can tell you that I've had good HCG in the past and bad HCG in the past. And without going into too much, graphic detail here, you're going to fucking know.
Right.
You're just like, I'm sure everybody here would agree with me. You're going to fucking know if your HCG at Clomid is real.
Right.
And, you know, for the most part, I know guys who have done exactly what you said you were on whenever you got your wife pregnant. I know plenty of people that's been on and they've been able to get their wife pregnant. So there's that, but some people can't, you know, guys that's been doing this for 10, 15, 18 years or 20 years, whatever, how many years you've been doing it. They can't. And I know plenty of those guys who have simply came off, went to a fertility doctor and picked it up directly from the pharmacy. And I will tell you, one of my best friends ended up having to do this. It's been about 13 or 14 years ago for him. He's a little bit older than me, but he'd been doing it for a while and he went to the doctor and I can't remember his exact dosage, but it was like 1500 IU a day or something like that of HCG. I mean, it was more than what you ever hear about bodybuilders in 1500 or 2000 a day. I think he was going like once every 2 weeks and picking up like a 20,000 IU bottle from the pharmacy. And it took about 6 weeks and he's got a kid now and I'm pretty sure it's his because it looks just like him.
I'm pretty sure it's his. Well
I mean, looks pretty fucking close to him. So right. I'm pretty confident that it is.
Well, I will say this, that a lot of the online protocols, and again, I'm using air quotes right now, because a lot of the shit that you'll find on, you know, chat rooms and shit, forums and shit like that online, a lot of people don't talk about HCG when it comes to, you know, recreational testosterone usage. They're talking about Clomid. They're talking about Novadex. They're talking about things like that for a PCT that they're making these recommendations to. So I'm going to go out on a limb with this guy and say he doesn't mention how he PCT'd. So it's very possible that he may have just done like a recommended Clomid PCT or something like that. So if he hasn't actually taken HCG, then that could essentially be the key to his situation. Maybe he needs to go see a doctor and get a prescription for HCG.
Well, there's also
what I do.
Yeah, there's also too, like people have tried, like I have clients and friends who have tried on just, you know, the normal HCG, Novadex and Clomid, and it didn't really happen or it took a very long time to happen. But when they add in the HMG, which is pretty hard to get, and it's pretty pricey for most people. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know one person that the HMG-HCG combo hasn't worked for in terms of fertility. I mean, two of my clients within the past 4 months got their wife, girlfriend pregnant. And I've had friends that it's worked for. So, you know, people should also look into getting the HMG.
Because I'm not familiar with that.
What was that?
What is HMG? I'm not familiar with that.
So basically, HCG will raise LH in the body, but HMG is going to be almost like an exogenous form of LH. So it's going to really, really boost it up. And of course, you have some people run Clomid with it, some without, but I know people who just run the HCG, HN, and HMG. And it's worked every time. Like I said, it's just very pricey for most people. And it's hard to find real. And a lot of doctors don't even use it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What do you think, Joe?
Sorry, I'd muted myself. Yeah, I mean, the HMG's mixture of luteinizing and folate stimulating. So, but if you've got low levels of that and your goal is to get someone pregnant, then HMG is going to be the quickest solution for that, for sure. It's going to replace those things that are obviously lacking, that have not rebound during your PCT. But again, we don't know what your protocol is for PCT, so it's really hard for us to kind of diagnose it. But that's pretty much the answer he's probably looking for, is how can he resolve that situation, right, or how do people resolve that situation quickly? Because most people just want to conceive and then go back on anyway.
Yeah.
So the end goal for them is not like long term getting everything back functioning. It's I want to have a child. How can I do that? And then I'm going to get back to business as usual. So that's probably the best course of action for someone in that scenario.
Cool. Good deal. So we got some business questions that are kind of more related to supplements and stuff, but two of them are pretty stupid. So I'm going to ask.
They were all pretty stupid.
Yeah, they were. Talking about, I'm going to go with the last question, which is what made you guys decide to go the direction that you have gone with your life, and how did you know that that was the right thing for you in terms of business? What's that? You're really, really quiet, Joe.
Sorry?
No, you were
I was quiet.
Yeah,
you were looking for something, but you were muffled.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I had my thumb over the microphone.
Okay.
That's probably why.
That works.
I was more curious as to what one of the stupid questions was for entertainment value.
Well, I mean, you know, when someone asked how important is it to have innovation to start a supplement company, it's like, you know, I think there was a comment made from someone about just copying everybody else's products like people have done over the years. Like, fuck it, just take Joe's shit, all of it, take everyone. He did all of it. We'll make the money and just change all the names, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah, launching tomorrow, projected
correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, because obviously you have knowledge and insight on this, especially from a legal standpoint. You know, back when I was signed with Gear Nutra, back in when I was not very highly educated on certain things for obvious reasons by saying what I just said, I spoke with, it wasn't the owner. The owner, I don't have a lot of respect for, but that's a different story for another day. One of the other guys, we were talking about, formulas and stuff, and I kind of looked at it, and I wasn't trying to, I really genuinely wasn't being an ass to the guy at all. I was asking a very nice question. I kind of looked at it and I was like, well, you know, it kind of looks like other products I've seen on the market. Like, how can you, like, I was asking him, like, how can one company produce another product that is virtually the same thing, like same exact, you know, formula. And he told me that if you have a 5% deviation on your ingredients, you can legally do so. Like, for example, I'm just going to use like one ingredient. You're using 100 milligrams of anything, and I decide, you know what, I'm going to use 95 or I'm going to use 105. I can do that and I'm perfectly fine. Is that right or not right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, the food industry has the same when it comes to recording macronutrients as well. So you've got to be careful on the labels. Like, I'm declaring protein. I mean, you can declare like 25 grams and really it's like 22 and a half of 22, 23. You know, there's wiggle room, and companies will take advantage of that to obviously show there's more in the product. When it comes to protecting a formula, if you're full disclosure, there's no protecting the formula, dude. I mean, that's why there's so much copying, and that's why some of the products I don't do full disclosure on. It's not that I'm hiding anything. It's just, if I'm going to spend 11 months making shreddable sweat sticks, self-experimenting, I'm not going to tell every Tom, Dick, and Harry exactly how many milligrams of each material I'm putting in there.
Yeah,
go and experiment yourself, you assholes. Like, don't copy me. It's the same with Matador, shreddable. I'll protect certain ones that have my intellectual property in there, and it's not a health supplement, where I believe health supplements, you should be fully declaring everything. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something like that that's unique to me and my time and investment personally and my own health, then I'm not disclosing that. And if people don't want to buy the product saying it's non-transparent, then so be it. You know what? Look at the rest of the line. 90% of the products are fully transparent, but those key ones are going to be protected while it's still legal to do so.
Yeah, I would agree with that strategy. And anybody that has any business sense should agree with it as well. I mean, just for what you said, the moment that you disclose exactly what's in it, there's going to be 14 other companies. Well, probably just, let's be realistic, there's two or three in particular that is probably going to copy you like tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, go and try. Why is no one like not shreddable off completely in the sweat state? Good luck. I mean, because some of these materials, 2 milligrams either way makes a big difference because of that. That's strong and you don't need that much of them.
Right.
So when it comes to refining and feeling the difference of a couple of milligrams either way on some of these, and it feels completely different in the body, and the titrating of one material versus another and getting the ratios right because they're complementary, what they do in the body, I'm like, people won't understand that. So good luck trying to fucking work it out. It'll take you forever. You know,
you know,
so
what's
I refuse to disclose it.
I love it.
This is a little bit of, it's slightly off topic, but it's really not either. You know, a lot of people probably don't know that you're your own guinea pig for your products, and you test out all of your own stuff. I don't feel that most owners, most supplement companies owners do that. They probably just own a company and have a research.
Oh, dude, they buy a formula off the shelf and get some sample. Oh, yeah, this one tastes good. Nice. Let's release it. They have no fucking, listen to some of the fucking people with YouTube channels. Like, I'm not going to name names here, but I mean, listen to them talk about the products they're formulating.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. I mean, yeah, we'll put some carbohydrate and some creatine, 5 grams, and it, yeah, it tastes good.
Well, when you're talking about, like, specific product, when you mentioned shreddable, obviously there's certain ingredients in there that's going to be very potent. Like you said, if you go 1 milligram either direction, you know, it's going to make a very dramatic, a very dramatic difference in the end result. I'm just kind of wondering how many people out there that is tampered with that, and they don't understand that 1 milligram makes a big difference, and these particular people have probably fucked themselves up good by doing 5 or 10 milligrams or greater than that.
I can tell you, dude, I've done it to myself that many times by making shreddable. I mean, I had the cold sweats, 2 hoodies, 3 duvets wrapped up wide on the mattress, laying on the mattress on the floor. Fuck, I overdid this version. We need to scale it back.
Wow. It's crazy. But you know what, dude? Joe, you're 1,000,000% right. Like, having worked with other supplement companies, I've literally seen, this is what they do. This is the truth, okay? They will get a list of new potential products from the manufacturer in an email, and it'll have a list of what the products are. And they just go down the list, and they go, oh, that looks cool. Yeah, let's try that one. This looks cool. Let's try that one. They don't formulate shit. They might say, this product needs a little bit more of one ingredient or something in it. If it's like a broad spectrum product, like a carb product that they want to see some more Hydromax in or something like that. But at the end of the day, or they might want a little bit more stem in something or whatever, but they don't formulate shit. They literally get a list of stuff and they just pick what they want off of it from the manufacturer. And then they build off of that. It's not, nobody does what you do. At least I don't know anybody that does what you do. That
I feel like all the new startup supplement companies, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yes, you know they are, because that's how they're marketing the manufacturers now. Manufacturer, you go on Facebook, you get 4 manufacturers hitting you up. We'll private label your product. We have in-house formulations, blah, 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 blah. I mean, that's what everybody does.
Yeah, yep. It's buy off the shelf. There's not many people who are still putting things together from like a concept. I mean, like, I just signed off the non-hormonal muscle building product for males and females. If you're on cycle, it'll also complement using the use of anabolics and amplify the results there. Like, no one's putting these out. This is another category that's being created. It doesn't affect blood work, the material, so it's not negatively going to affect, well, we just mentioned folliculating, stimulating, luteinizing hormone, free testosterone. It's not going to affect any testosterone or estrogen levels. It works on other pathways. So, I mean, no one's doing that stuff. And I know in a couple of years, it'll be a very popular category.
Right.
You know, so you building that out, that's me going through a shit ton of studies and literature and then seeing how certain things would interact and what pathways are activated. I mean, it takes work. I mean, it's easiest to go to a manufacturer and say, hey, I need something. What have you got? You know?
Yeah. Of course it's easy, and that's the reason why a lot of new companies, startups don't, you know, we don't see them sticking around either, or we don't see anybody really surviving 10 years, you know, 11, we're almost on 12 years now with AD, right? Where...
Yeah, I mean, we're 12 years in, we're always doing unique and innovative stuff, and there's a bunch that are in the works now, and that's why it doesn't upset me now that people copy, because... you can't copy what's coming tomorrow. You know, there's just a bunch of stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, it's... Well, it's just the industry. It is what it is now. It's the same as coaching. I mean, you can come up with a unique concept coaching or a way of doing it, and then you're going to have clients, and then after a year of doing it, all those clients become coaches, and your protocol's everywhere. I mean, it's the same with anything in the industry, right? Someone's doing anything different, then you've got 100, 200, 300 people doing it like a couple of weeks later.
Right.
Copy. You know, if Justin goes into the gym and puts a video up of him doing an exercise a certain way because he's freaky, I'm like, oh, tomorrow Instagram is full of people doing that exercise and claiming it's their own, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny you mentioned that is back in 2014, I think that's when I started training with Matt. You know, Matt was doing my videos. And, you know, Matt did all my YouTube work. I am I'm not technological. Like, I'm technologically inclined in certain areas and not in others, just because I never had a desire to be an Instagram star or a YouTube star or anything like that. But anyways, we posted a few, and I'm not going to, okay, so like the banded pullover, you know, I'd never seen anyone do that before. I don't claim to invent it, because I fucking assure you someone's done it before me, and that's why I don't claim to it. Literally 2 weeks later, I'll let you guys speculate here, because I do have a lot of respect for this guy. He's a highly intelligent guy. Next thing I know, he basically claims to it. You know, you know what? He may have not even seen my video. He might not have seen it. I'm not accusing anyone of plagiarism. That's why I didn't fucking come up with it. I'm sure people long before me, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s thought of this design before me. But it's like, when you see something, you can't just fucking slap your name to it. That pisses me off.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody just go away.
No, no, you're good. You're good. I think you just stopped and everybody else is kind of quiet. So no, we're good. But yeah, I think
you need to kind of rein us back in, Luke, because we lost sight of what we
question. We lost track of the question. The fucking question was supposed to be, what made you know this was the direction you wanted to go in your life in terms of like coaching for these guys and supplements for you? What I do want to hear that. I know we've talked a little bit about your history and kind of how you know, did a lot of stuff on yourself, but what point in time, Joe, what did you fully decide that you wanted to be a supplement company owner? Like what happened in your life? Or did you know that from like a young age as a kid? Like, what made you make that decision ultimately?
I started importing materials and supplements from the USA when I was 16.
Wow.
So I would say it goes back that early, from the days of formulating. So when you start training, most people, like, I'll get into the gym, most people focus on training. I was nutrition, but first I was supplements, and I was fascinated by what these could do. So my head was just in it all the time. So I started experimenting, and then I would buy things. I would take them. I would give them to my training buddies, and they would get results. And I was like, man, what else? So it started then, and I've always been connected to supplements all the way through college. I was selling supplements, importing supplements. In university, I mean, I had a little side business where I had distribution accounts with brands, and I was selling and doing people's diets in the gym while I was in university. I always had a side hustle and a job as well. So I would work one or two jobs while I was in university, and this was my side hustle on the side. But it was just a passion. And then I met the owner of a supplement retailer when I was on vacation in my home gym. I was on Easter holidays, and that was my first real connection in the industry. And I was I was 18, 19 at the time. And I worked my ass off this guy. Every holiday I would come back, I would do 12-hour days. I wasn't getting paid. I was doing my internship and proving that I was worthy. And he was like, he knew I was a different animal. So he was probably the one person who recognized potential in me first. Cool. And I didn't even know I had a potential for anything. So, you know, he saw something in me, and he just let me do my thing. And that's where I started. I finished my exams in university, and the next day I turned up in their office and started working. That was it. I was only there for 12, 13 months, but after 7 months, I already started building the first iteration of AD, but when I joined him, I had 7 products designed and all the raw materials sourced from China. Formulations were already done. I was just getting packaging. And when he met me, he was like, really? It was like, no one, because back then it's a different industry. No one was popping up brands. It was dominated by a dozen companies worldwide.
Yeah.
So for me at that age of like 19 to have a full 20, to have a full business model, product formulations, materials sourced from China, pricing strategy done, and potential routes to market, he was like, yeah, you ain't normal. So that's how I got into it. And then he knew that I wasn't going to be there long because I had to walk my own path. So yeah. I got my degree, which honestly, I mean, I only got that really because of my mum, because right. She wanted me to go to university and it was something to me to fall back on. But I was hustling and working all the way through that. So yeah, my direction was kind of set early, and there was no obvious route for me. So I mean, if you want something bad enough and you're determined, you'll do whatever the fucking hell it takes. Like if you want something, that there's no barriers. Like I would be off traveling, leaving like everything behind, just to go and like potentially meet people. I didn't know where I was going. I was like, I don't know who these people are. I was in so many situations that were shady and stuff. But if you do something, you just have blind faith that you're going to get there. And, you know, I don't see that much now. I think everyone's doesn't want to work, or it should come easy. They should be handed something, or if there's a lot of work involved or risk, they don't want to do that. Like every time I did something, I had to roll the dice because I had no money, nothing behind me. So every product I released, I was risking the company because it was an investment, and it's always been that way. So yeah, it's a long story short, I'll leave it there. Like it was, yeah, I knew young, but this is where I wanted to be involved in. And did I have worry about how do I have connections? Do I know how to do it? No, I knew that I would make it work, and you've just got to get shit done and have confidence. Well, not even confidence, just be belligerent enough to go ahead and follow your passion, you know?
Yeah. So what was the very first product that you brought to market? Very first product?
For AD, it was Toro Test, which launched in 2009. Before that, I made about 8 to 10 other products for other brands as a consultant. And worked for 2 other supplement companies away from product formulation as a consultant on the business side of things. And that was all by the age of 21.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Tough act to follow, but what do you guys think over there? We don't got a lot of time, but let's definitely want to hear why you guys decided to take the route of being a coach.
Honestly, it's probably because I was a bodybuilder, because if I weren't a bodybuilder, I would not foresee myself doing what I'm doing right now. Okay. And honestly, bodybuilding was always my passion and my desire, you know, from the time I was about 13 or 14 years old. And I said, that's the only reason why I'm rewinding as far as I did, as I'm going right now. I'm going to try to sum this up quickly. Is I don't think I'm very business driven as well. So you have to keep that in mind. Like if I didn't see any money in the bodybuilding industry, I probably would just be I probably would have never gotten past 230, 240 pounds. You know, I probably would have been a recreational weightlifter, so to say. But, you know, when I turned pro, I still had a job when I turned pro. I mean, I was still working, you know, and I wasn't earning money from the fitness industry at all, like $0 from the fitness industry. And, you know, once money started coming in, when I started competing, that obviously motivated me along with my own personal success on stage. It was a combination that pushed me to be as good as I could be. And I'm sure if you guys, you know, anyone that's, you know, followed me long term knows there was a period of time that I didn't compete. And I also didn't coach people. I wasn't really interested in either one for a period of time there. So for me, falling into what I'm doing, it's like, I kind of feel like I sort of live vicariously through my clients now. It's almost like I don't have the desire to compete myself. while as I'm able to see other people do it. So it's like I get the same happiness and joy that whenever I competed, but I'm watching it on other people. Also, you know, it you don't get this too often. You know, most people have the bodybuilding desire, but every now and then I get people who just simply wants a lifestyle change. And when I can help them lose weight and it makes them feel good, changes their life, it makes me feel good as well. The weird thing about this is, and I'll sum it up at this, I'll leave it here. I'm very weird when it comes to emotion. And I'm sure you guys know me. Like, if you come up and you hug me, I'll just kind of freeze. It's like, like when people's like, hey man, you know, like, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate this internally. I just don't know how to show it externally.
Yeah.
You know, someone will call me like after a show that they just want, like, hey bro, man, I greatly appreciate it. Like, I couldn't have done this without you. I love you, all this stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, man, let's talk about the rebound tomorrow. Like, and I don't do that on, I'm not dismissing it because I greatly appreciate those comments. There's like something about expressing my emotion is not very fucking good with me. But like when I do get those comments, it makes me appreciate my own work as well. Kind of puts things in perspective for me when I realize I'm helping someone out and I'm changing their life. And again, like I said, if money wasn't there, I'll admit straight up, I wouldn't be doing this because I am a very money-driven individual. So it, to me, it was a no-brainer. It was like, I get to do something that I really fucking love, and I get to make money too. And not many people in the world, there's a lot of people out there who makes a lot of money, a lot more than I do, but they hate what the fuck they do. Right. And then you have the opposite spectrum. You have people out there who love what they do and they live paycheck to paycheck and they're broke. I personally feel I have the ultimate balance. It's like I get to do what I love and I make money that I'm comfortable with. So, you know, it's a situation where they say if you do what you love, then you never work a day in your life. And that's how I feel.
Cool. Very cool. You know, what's funny is that Dallas McCarver actually told me, we had a conversation about you once and he told me he called you the statue. He said that the only time that you show emotion is when you're behind closed doors with your friends. That when you're out like in public in front of people, you have like a blank stare. Like most people are like, he very, very rarely does he ever show any emotion. He said you're like a statue. You know what I mean? And I just laughed. I was like, wow. And that was years ago. And I still remember that. And you just talking about it is funny. Cause you know, it just goes to show that that's how people do see you in certain situations, you know?
Yeah. And it really is. I am like that. And I don't mean to be that way, but like, I kind of have a resting bitch face. I don't know if that's a term used in or not, but like when you first meet me, it's like, you know, I was in the gym late last night and I seen a guy come in and he's wearing a Redcon shirt. And by the way, this is a new gym to me. Like I don't know many people here. Mm-hmm. Like I'm in a different location. So obviously if you're wearing a Redcon shirt and you're somewhat built, you're probably into bodybuilding. And I could see this dude eyeballed me from a distance. And I feel like he was kind of weird about approaching me or talking to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't approach anybody myself. I normally just mind my own business. And I could tell that this guy was like, he's probably thinking this big motherfucker is probably an asshole. I'm not, cause I didn't even speak to him. I didn't crack a smile and do anything. And then once we started talking, I ended up spending like an extra 45 minutes talking to this guy after I was done working out. So yeah, Dallas is 100% right. It's like, if you just see me on social media or you meet me at an expo, I'm very lame. I'm very vanilla. Like I don't get too into things. But once you actually talk to me, you'll realize I don't ever shut the fuck up. Oh, yeah. Like I talk all the time. I'm very personable with people. Yeah. But again, you don't see that side of me until you actually get to know me. I guess I'm still a little bit introvert.
Yeah. So what was the name of the guy you talked to last night? Do you remember?
Now I feel like a dick. Because
I just wanted to see.
I'll say this. I'm a type of person. I am extremely good with faces. I never forget a face. I can remember people since I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I'll know, like, I can even be like, oh, I haven't seen this guy in 20 years and he looks exactly the same, but I won't fucking remember a name. It's like, if you're not a part of my life, like on a daily basis, I'm not going to remember your name. I'll remember your face. I'll remember the conversation. I'll remember where you work, what you do, what you've told me, but I won't remember your name.
What about you, Dom?
Yeah, so basically for me, I mean, it started when I was 16, but not really intentionally. I remember I did my first show, and the day my parents brought me to West that weekend, like as a surprise, and I actually lost my job at Gold's Gym because of that. But anyways, we were there. I remember my dad was like fasting for a month, and he looked real skinny fat. He said, oh, you think you can put a diet together for me? You know, I want to put some muscle. I said, all right, yeah, sure. 2 to 3 weeks later, he goes, you know what? I think I want to compete. I was like, huh? He goes, yeah, I think I'm going to start training. I'm going to compete. He goes, but I want you to prep me. He goes, I want you to do what Thackeray does. Because he knew I would just sit in my – they didn't have to worry about me going out and partying, at least not until a little bit later on. But I would just sit in my room, read forums, you know, read books about nutrition and training. And he goes, I want you to do exactly what Thackeray does. I want you to learn that. He goes, just don't kill me. Just get me ready for my first show. And a year later, he wound up winning both of his classes.
Nice.
And after that, I was like, I kind of like this. So I just found people on Instagram. Instagram was first starting. I would tell them, hey, you know, I'm just starting to learn this stuff. Can I coach you for free? And I did it for free for a short while. And all of a sudden, people started offering me money. Then it was a side thing throughout the years. Wasn't really ever going to be something I wanted to do full time. You know, I swore I was going to be a bodybuilder full time. Stupid at the time. But then until 2000, I'll never forget December. I never forget this date. It was December 6, 2017. I remember I was trying to join the army for months, got a tattoo removed. I was so fed up with my life at that point. My mom died the year before. I had no money. And then Joe hit me up that day. And he said, you know, man, you have a talent with the coach. He goes, why don't you try to do it a little more? Push it a little more on social media. And he gave me some hints and whatnot. And then for a few months, I went on. That's when story mode got started and everything. And I would post, you know, bits and pieces about supplements, vitamins, nutrition. And then the coaching went full time March 2018. But up until that point, you know, I had numerous people in the top five at, you know, national level shows, people winning overalls, lifestyles. But I never thought it would be a full time thing. And then thankfully, like I said, March 2018, I had to, you know, stop working for my dad to go full time with the coaching. And then here I am today. But like Justin said, you know, I'm doing what I love. I love helping people. For me, yes. Am I doing it now because it is my business? Yes, I make money from it. But my initial drive point isn't the money. It's money. So money is a side effect of what I do. I love putting passion into it. I love what I do. I love watching people, but, you know, being happy, either be the lifestyle people and the competitors. And the money is a side effect of what I love. And, you know, thankfully, it's been very good to me up until this point. And that's how it got started for me. And that's what kills me about these, you know, I get these people that come to me, oh, I'm going to learn so much from you and this and that. And then they're coaching a few months later. And now I tell people straight out, you're not going to learn a thing from me. I don't teach anything I do. I could probably not even teach most of the stuff I do because it's more instinctual. And they don't get that. So then I see people getting ready for shows and all of a sudden they're a coach because they have to pay for the growth hormone and stuff. And it kills me because then people take their money and they waste time. They may hurt their health with them. And, you know, money was never the drive factor for what it. Justin is a different mindset in terms of he's not just doing it for money. He's clearly beyond good at what he fucking does with his job. Right. As opposed to most people that think, oh, I'm going to make money off this. And they don't know their fucking ass from their elbow. I mean, they don't know the difference between a fucking carrot and a sweet potato or a Hershey bar and a fucking carrot. So that's what I've always said. So that's always been my thing with it. I love what I do. I love helping people. And, you know, I'm also an introvert myself, but throughout the years, I've gotten to be a bit more outgoing in my emotions. And, you know, seeing people, you know, like with the messages about how happy they are, about how when they win a show, when they hit a goal, about how happy they are, it makes me happy and I'm able to express it back to them. And, you know, that makes it just much even more fruitful for me is seeing people's lives change, their mindsets change. I mean, you get people come to you, maybe some health issues, maybe they're divorced, maybe they're having relationship issues, and you just change your total life. And my dad is actually a testament to that. He says I changed his life, you know.
Yeah.
He, you know, smoking two to three packs of cigarettes a day, working all the time. He wasn't really, I don't want to call him mean, but he wasn't really as close to people, even us, as he was till he got into bodybuilding. And me and him got very close when he got into bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And I see Matt go into different aspects of his life, and he'll admit that. So to see, you know, it change people's whole life is just the more fruitful part of it for me. And thankfully, you know, I have the life I have now because of the people in the past and the people that currently I work with. So that was my whole thing with it. And for anybody looking to get into coaching, you don't just write a fucking diet for people and send it to them. Actually take the time to learn, take people on for free for a while, learn what you're doing, and make sure it's known that you're not experienced with it, because there's just so much bullshit out there now. And that's my story in the coaching side of things.
That's cool. And that truth and realness is something that you don't get from most people. Like, they're not going to come out and say, hey, I'm just starting to do this, can I help you for free? They're just going to say, I'm the best coach in the world. Come sign up with me for $10,000 a month. and then they'll fuck you up and blame it on somebody else.
Pretty much. I just want to embarrass Tom a little bit as well. And I'm honestly filled with pride every time that I see him posting his clients, because it was a leap of faith for him just to take the risk and do the coaching thing when he was kind of a loose end in 2016, not knowing what to do. And I try and advise people, and many don't listen, and Dom trusted and ran with it. And like, I love seeing his results, and like when his guys post and they're excited, I'm like, yeah, I'm very proud of you, Dominic. I don't say publicly very often, but to see where you've come from those dark moments, and you really were at a loss of what you're going to do with yourself to become one of the leading up-and-coming coaches, one of the most respected in the industry. It's like, it's super freaking cool for me to see. I always love seeing your posts of your clients and reading what they say about you.
No, I appreciate coming from you that, not to get all too emo on this show, I all the time, you know, I tell people, you know, it was you. You were the one who gave me that boost of confidence and that trust and that little bit of guidance to, you know, go ahead and do it. That was one of the best decisions I ever made. And thank God, you know, who knows what I would have been doing myself now, bodybuilding wise or even career wise, whatever you want to call it.
It's that thing, man. It just takes one person. It could be anybody just to instill that belief when you've got potential to do something, because we can't see our own potential. We're always blind to it. So like when I see it, I always try and like, if I can't directly help someone, at least tell them, like, you could be really good at this. You really need to pursue it. And sometimes it falls on deaf ears. Most of the time it does, but the few that do listen and take it on board and they run with it, there's nothing better. Like, this is, it gives me the most satisfaction when I see someone do that, you know, because everyone here on this podcast and probably who's listening to this show is really bad at recognizing they're good at something.
Yep.
I think that's you.
Very true. I think that's a common, just a person trait, you know, is that we always think we should do this, but we don't necessarily focus on the things that we know we're good at. And that's, you know, and I think that's having somebody that can mentor you or be there for you to kind of recognize those things like you did in that situation with Dom is fantastic. Cause that's, you know, just kind of opens up that opportunity and gives them the willingness to take that step. So really cool.
I may be stubborn with a lot of stuff Joe tells me. It may take me 2, 3, 4 tries to actually follow through with it. But that one, I, you know, jumped right in head first with.
Yeah. What do you think you would be doing now if you weren't a coach? You'd be like doing like some construction or something?
Dude, honestly, I don't even like to even think about the what ifs, because I was, like Joe said, I was so lost.
Yeah.
I mean, so many times I told myself I wouldn't bodybuild again. I was working for my dad doing concrete, which was kind of a blow to my ego, you know, because I didn't, you know, what he does make a very good living, what he does. And I've been working with him since I was 6 years old. And everything I do now is based off all the skill sets and the work ethic he taught me, but that's not what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I was like, fuck, man. I was stuck doing that. And it was just, honestly, at the time, I didn't know. So that's why I was like, you know, my two brothers went to the army. Military was something my mom wanted me to do before I got into bodybuilding. So I probably most likely would have went to the military. You know, my two brothers were gone. I, you know, where my brothers go, I go. And obviously I can't do that when they're in the military. So like the next thing would be to go as well. And, you know, thankfully listening to their stories, I didn't do it. And thank God I listened to Joe. So it's, I don't even like to think of the what ifs. I'm just thankful for what I have now and for what I went through, because if I didn't go through any of that, I wouldn't be able to connect to people on the level I'm able to connect with now. So yeah, the what ifs are like, oh, but I can't even imagine, you know.
It was funny because I got a vision of you wearing a hard hat whistling at the ladies on the street.
Yeah, see, that is definitely no hard hats. We were non-union, but
you know, okay.
That's out cool. In the summertime in those Manhattan streets, there was definitely a lot of girls to see. That was the one good part of it.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, anybody got any closing thoughts? No.
have a great week. Thank you for sending us some good questions. We appreciate them.
Absolutely, man. When you guys give us good stuff and actually gives us stuff to dig into, makes for a much better show, in my opinion. So, all right, gentlemen, until next week, get the fuck out of here.
Have a good day, guys.
Yeah, enjoy your week, and bye.
Do you think you have what it takes to be part of the most elite team out there? If you've got the AD gene, then visit farm.projectad.me and apply now.